crisis de 2007-2008 creó tanto daño que hasta la fecha no se han podido recobrar los obreros. Una vez que se implemente el TPP, otros tantos millones de desplazados obreros, esos indignados, hartos del sistema capitalista dentro de Estados Unidos, unos por el bando de Donald Trump, por el bando del Partido Libertario, ¿qué tipo de solución pueden sacar de abajo para arriba desde las bases en un estado como es Estados Unidos hoy día?
Sabemos muy bien que el descontento social causado por la dislocación económica puede ser manipulado tanto por la derecha o canalizado por la izquierda. En el caso de Trump y Bernie Sanders es importante diferenciar que lo que propone Sanders al menos eran algunas reformas importantes. Lo que propone Trump es desviar la atención de estos trabajadores descontentos, indignados, hacia un racismo, hacia una xenofobia, para desviar la atención real de los factores fundamentales que causaron la crisis económica. No creo que lo que Sanders proponía en sí iba a alterar mucho el orden social, pero al menos eran reformas concretas y una postura muy distinta. O sea, hay que reconocer, ese descontento nutrió estos dos partidos, estos dos candidatos, pero la forma en que se manipularon por parte de Trump los desvía, los canaliza hacia el racismo, la xenofobia, la misoginia, y creo que es muy peligroso y que lo que ocurre ahora va a ser la forma en que Clinton trate de igual también de manipular ese descontento, y no creo que lo va a poder hacer, creo que ya la superó.
Sí, es cierto lo que se especula por ahí en los círculos cercanos a Clinton y a Obama, de que ella es más halcona o representa los derechos de los halcones republicanos mejor que Obama. Quiere decir de que si Obama deportó casi 2 millones, pues podemos esperar anticipar una deportación de más de 4 millones de migrantes, y eso le daría un poco de felicidad a las bases derechistas de los seguidores de Donald Trump, ¿no?
Sí, pero yo creo que va a ser la propuesta de deportar personas que ya son parte del tejido social requiere una acción incluso hasta militar para poder lograrla, y creo que causaría una crisis fundamental en Estados Unidos, y no creo que se va a lograr de forma así masiva. Lo que vamos a ver continuar es el proceso cotidiano de deportaciones bajo el lema de que es por la seguridad, o que bajo el lema de que son personas culpables de crímenes. Bajo ese pretexto se esconderá de nuevo Hillary Clinton, igual que se escondió Obama, para lograr la deportación de millones de personas. Pero no creo que van a ser esas redadas masivas de que habla Donald Trump de deportar 12 millones de personas de un solo golpe. Creo que seguiremos viendo una política y una postura por parte de la administración de Clinton que refleje la política anti-inmigrante que reflejaba Obama, que se convirtió en el presidente deportador principal de este país.
Y cuando llegue la convención del Partido Demócrata en Filadelfia el mes próximo, Bernie Sanders va a tratar con muchos seguidores detrás, con una alianza fuerte de grupos de base, exigir de que la plataforma del Partido Demócrata se mueva hacia la izquierda. Ella puede prometer cualquier cosa, pero Barack Obama también prometió y no cumplió nada. Entonces, ¿no sería posible incluir en la plataforma alguna cláusula vinculante que obligue a Hillary Clinton a cumplir las promesas que le haga a Bernie Sanders el día de la convención?
Es posible, pero hay que reconocer que y hay que recordar que en casi todos los casos las plataformas se convierten en temas que los candidatos rápidamente olvidan. Se le puede incluir y se debe incluir, y creo que eso es lo que tratará de hacer Bernie Sanders, pero al fin y al cabo la realidad es que los candidatos manipulan la plataforma, no le ponen caso, simplemente hablan de condiciones diferentes al llegar al poder, se olvidan de la plataforma, como lo hizo el señor Obama en muchas ocasiones, el presidente que prometió mucho e hizo muy, muy poco.
David Bacon es escritor y videoperiodista. Se identifica también como activista defensor de los derechos de los migrantes. Al final del día, dice, los seguidores de Sanders y los de Clinton aunarán fuerzas para bloquear la entrada de Donald Trump a la Casa Blanca.
Yo creo que Donald Trump es una amenaza tan grande, y lo que él representa, el poder detrás de toda la retórica de él, de la retórica racista y todo. Lo que representa Donald Trump es una sección muy derechista de la capital estadounidense. Entonces, si Trump y su cúpula dan una votación presidencial en noviembre, va a haber cosas muy malas para trabajadores y trabajadoras, y muchos lo reconocen. Entonces, ellos van a enfrentar una decisión entre apoyar a la candidatura de Hillary Clinton, que ellos no son muy satisfechos, no son muy contentos con ella, pero el peligro mucho más grande que Donald Trump. Y entonces yo creo que al final, la gran mayoría de trabajadores y trabajadoras y sindicatos van a hacer campaña en contra de Trump por el peligro que representa racismo, una histeria anti-inmigrante, una administración dispuesta de dar a los grandes bancos y los grandes capitalistas cualquier cosa que quieren, quitando todas las reglas que protejan a trabajadores y trabajadoras. Y un peligro muy grande. Que en los sindicatos los trabajadores y trabajadoras son más educados sobre su papel político, y por eso yo creo que especialmente en los sindicatos los obreros y obreras van a escoger lo menos malo, pero eso les va a enfrentar con una problemática como lo que hemos visto en los últimos 8 años y también durante la presidencia de Bill Clinton. Y eso es una administración elegido con votos de sindicatos y obreros y obreras, pero que hace como esfuerzo de cumplir con el mandato de los grandes bancos y las grandes corporaciones que los sindicatos y los sindicatos.
En cuanto a la política agresiva de Halcona de Clinton y las posibles intervenciones militares en América Latina, Medio Oriente y demás, Bacon admite que, independientemente del nombre del partido, la tendencia imperial estadounidense se mantendrá en el mismo curso.
Ese es el problema del imperialismo, es que cualquier de los dos candidatos sea elegido, Clinton o Trump, vamos a tener el mismo imperio y la misma política pro-guerra, neocolonial, y entonces para mí no hay una diferencia muy grande en términos de la política extranjera de Clinton y Trump. Los dos van a hacer lo necesario para tratar de preservar y mantener su imperio.
Aquí concluye esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa, el mismo que es producido gracias a las generosas donaciones de las y los radioyentes. A nombre de Toshi y de Norma Martínez, se despide de tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
El hombre que tiene algo que decir se desespera al no encontrar oyentes, pero es más desalentador para el escucha el no encontrar a alguien que tenga algo que decirle.
¿Tienes un auto que ya no camina y solamente está estorbando? ¿Sale más barato el transporte público que llenarlo de gasolina? ¿Te quieres deshacer de él, pero no sabes cómo? Pues ahora puedes donar tu auto y apoyar a tu estación favorita. Y no importa la condición, apóyanos donando tu carcacha vieja al 1-877-KPFK-AUTO, 1-877-573-5286. Y apoya a tu estación favorita. Nosotros nos encargaremos de todo.
From Elephant Hill in El Sereno, Mount Wilson in the San Gabriel Mountains, throughout Southern California and the virtual world beyond, the Eastside Community Radio Collective addresses issues and information from a Chicana-Chicano point of view that matters to all folks at the grassroots level. The Eastside Community Radio Collective is tied to the Eastside Cafe, with whom it promotes local community empowerment and autonomy. We invite all our listeners to like us on Facebook.
My name is Brad Johnson. I'm a former Clear Channel radio engineer, and when I'm in Santa Cruz, I listen to Freak Radio Santa Cruz.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Dress your observation in syncopation. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you. Song that's satirical, putting the mirror into miracle. It must be packed with social fact, or I won't love you. Sing me of kings and conferences martial. Tell me of mills and mines. Sing me of courts that aren't impartial. What's to be done with them? Tell me in rhythm. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must be tense with common sense, or I won't love you.
And you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. And this is Bathrobespierre's Broadsides, the June 9th, 2016 show, pre-recorded, but you can comment later, or actually now, to be played later or responded to later, at 423-4833. That's the phone number to call, area code 831-423-4833. The show concerns itself with poverty issues, civil rights issues, and just whatever enters my pretty little head. I'm Robert Norse, also known as Bathrobespierre Robert. I actually wore a bathrobe last night at the screening of Israel Dawson's Freedom Sleepers documentary down at the Del Mar. I'm hoping that can come out more broadly, particularly since I'm featured, or at least there's a lot of me in it. It's a short film. And it covers the protests at City Hall in favor of ending the sleeping ban and trying to expose and defy the ordinances that make it illegal to sleep after 11 o'clock at night for 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people. Some people say that number has dropped. That's possible. But anyway, it's over 1,000 folks a night face criminal penalties and a record and harassment from police and disturbing their sleep and unsafe conditions if they try to sleep, particularly if they try to sleep in groups to protect each other. And that's something the Freedom Sleepers tries to publicize, tries to fight, and does so every Tuesday night. In fact, there's another Freedom Sleep coming up on the 14th of June. That's 5 days away, and it's going to be outside City Hall, where they'll be having a City Hall meeting. I think they're going to actually have on the agenda the final vote for the resolution to box in the bums, or in this case, the performers, the tablers, even the panhandlers in these little bracketed blue areas on Pacific Avenue, banning them from all side streets, banning vendors from everywhere downtown unless they're selling books, audio, or paintings, and also banning all performances unless they fall within specified categories, and they all have to be inside these very limited blue boxes, and the location and number of the boxes will be talked about on the 14th of June at the City Council, actually, as they call themselves. And the specifics of this, the time when this shows up, it's always uncertain, but I don't think the agenda has come out yet. It usually comes out late on Thursday, and I'm preparing this show mid-afternoon Thursday to be played on Thursday night, which is when you're hearing it, I'm hoping. So a couple of updates about free radio. Still, as you can hear, this is a pre-recorded show, or at least as I'm telling you. But we have, as I've mentioned before, secured a kind of studio space, though we're not sure how long it's going to last, although it looks like, we're in good shape, at least for a limited period of time, but with very limited space. So if you've got any additional suggestions on studio space, do let us know. And the way you do that is you can get in touch with me at the same number I mentioned, 423-4833. It's also the number to call if you want a show on free radio. I ran into a couple people in the last week or so who do want a show. And that's the number to call, and we then kind of drag you into a meeting, ask you a number of questions, put the spotlight on you, and actually just sort of find out what does he want to do. And we're pretty lenient in our standards. Limitations are hate speech. That's a no-no. I mean, we allow all kinds of opinions on free radio. You know, Klan members take note. But then the only proviso is you have to allow for the opposition to give their perspective, too. And that, we don't get a lot of calls from the Nazi Party or the Clintonites or even the Republicans, but that can happen. Anyway, if you want to be, even if you are one of those folks and you want to be on free radio, come on in. I mean, there's all kinds of specialities you might have in terms of particular focuses on the community that might interest us. And, you know, we also do musical shows and all kinds of different shows. So let us know, because the community may benefit from your voice and you may benefit from the ability to get your voice out there. I'm going to be covering a lot of interviews I did in the last week or so. I may throw in, of course, a lot of little musical breaks. I've been trying to do that more so as to provide a little variety, beef things up with somebody's voice other than mine. And I may go back to Campaign Zero, which is the 10-point program that guests Black Lives Matter and others who are kind of stirred into action by the murders of black folks across the country in different places by the girls and boys in blue, mostly the boys in blue. I haven't heard of too many women in blue shooting down folks dead. My concern is to make sure that that and any other brutal behaviors don't happen or are stopped here in our local Santa Cruz Police Department. Some quick updates. Last show, you heard a report from Nancy Eaton about M.H. Cairns excluding her, and there's been some concerns in the last few weeks about that happening to at least several other people. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of details. Sarah Leonard has tried to reassure me that they're still being fair in their whole approach. Sarah's the executive director. She, of course, is welcome to come on the show and talk about it. Last time she was on, I think she was offended by something I said to her. But she's a sensitive person, and I'm a kind of an outspoken character, so that can happen with people. But I try to, you know, I am what I am, and I try to be both straightforward and not terribly oblivious to other people's feelings. I'm not the most sensitive guy in the world. It's certainly true. But I try to get at the truth of things, and that's really what this show is about. And sometimes people in positions of power can be feel threatened by that or offended by that. And in some cases, or in most cases, I say tough shit. But in Sarah Leonard's case, not so much, because I heard a lot of good things about her, liked what the contact I had with her was. And the problem, though, of course, is that with the crackdown on MH Can by the neighbors, the police, and the county, as I've told, restricting them severely to the number of people that can be there, it's, encouraged the management, and that maybe to a large extent Sarah and the workers under her, to try to hold in check any possible behavior by the clients that might be considered suspicious or offensive or troublesome by the neighbors or by the police. And I haven't heard documentation specifically that police have been videoing outside the MH Can, but that is the claim of numerous people who've come to the Huff meeting. It's hard to get the actual accurate details. It does require some energy and some probing, maybe even going out there and doing a stakeout, in which case you might be excluded from the coming into the MH Can. That was one of the reasons that supposedly, according to Nancy, she was excluded from MH Can. But I've heard things have gotten better in the last week or two, that Sarah's really been making an attempt to not to press down too hard on folks. I have so much sort of limited information from a few sources that everything I'm saying should be taken with a hefty batch of salt, because I need more info. If you've had any problems out there, if you have positive reports about what's happening, if you have any suggestions about dealing with neighborhood bigotry, which I think is the real problem, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. I'd like to hear more about it. And, so that's kind of the non-report on MH Can. I've been having some busy scurrying about getting some Public Records Acts updated. That's when you send an email to the city saying, I want all the information on this subject. And if they don't want to answer your questions, then you have to ask for documents that reference those issues, because they are obliged to provide documents. They can ignore your questions, they can hang up on you, but they're not supposed to ignore Public Records Act requests under state law. So that can be very helpful in giving you some sense of what's going on when the people in power want to shut up or they don't want to talk to you. It doesn't always work. It does require a lot of persistence, but it can be effective at different points. So I recently have been looking for the surveillance cameras around town and to find out where those are, how much money is being put into them. I actually didn't ask that specific question, but how extensive they are. Does the police department have a lot of arrangements with private security? What are the rules for retaining surveillance records? This has been an issue for body cameras that police are now wearing in numerous cities, may even be happening here in Santa Cruz. I think it is at times. I don't know how much it is. I think Capitola's recently adopted body cams. And the ACLU, our local little pipsqueak ACLU, which has gotten a somewhat louder squeak recently in the last year or two, thanks to pressure from a lot of us, as well as finally internal response from Vice Chair Steve Plaich, over the resistance of Peter Gelblum, the chair, and Mike Rotkin on the board, who's now resigned and is busy attempting to cut back metro routes as the executive director or on the board of directors of the Metro Transit. So the ACLU is, kind of tepidly pursuing, I don't know, whether it's the Sheriff's Department or the Capitola cops, mostly by conferring with officials. Plaich is big on this. Conferring with the bosses at the top instead of, engaging in a lot of grassroots activism. It fits in with his endless runs for city council, which he's now doing again. You may hear a lot of dissatisfaction in my voice, and indeed it's there. And I think these criticisms of Plaich are quite accurate. I will add, however, that he is also, to some extent, out there on the front lines, if only briefly. He and I tend to show up for brief periods of time at the Freedom Sleepouts, where others, like Abby Samuels and Keith McHenry and Zav Hirschfield, spend a lot of time there, not to mention Blue and a bunch of other actual folks who live on the streets and have to deal with these issues, who are out there regularly, and they stay there all night. Again, regarding the Freedom Sleepers, for those who don't know, that is, as I say, a once-a-week event, which happens where people, you know, curl up as best they can on the sidewalk, hopefully with a piece of cardboard underneath them, and somebody with a video camera in the vicinity in case there should be some harassment. There hasn't been much harassment recently directly by police, though the first attack security guards, which call themselves first alarm security guards, have been, you know, they're usually, oh, God, it's time to wake up. You know, it's not time to wake up. Give me a fucking ticket if you want, but leave me sleep. I'm trying to get the kind of sleep that ordinary people get. And if it doesn't look good to you, if it's aesthetically unpleasant, go do something real about it. Don't harass me. That's my gut response to that, though I don't know that I've actually said that because I don't sleep on the sidewalk there. I was ticketed three times. I rested once and ticketed twice, actually, and slept there probably more times than that, mostly in my vehicle when I was doing Freedom Sleeper support back in the fall of last year. But I understand the numbers there were growing last week at Freedom Sleep 48. 49 is coming up on the 14th. I believe that's the right number. I could be wrong. There were 20 to 29 people on the sidewalk in the morning sleeping. And the significance is that the strange police practice, maybe not so strange, is not to cite those, arrest those, or ticket those who are on the sidewalk sleeping, even though it's illegal after 11 o'clock at night until 8:30 in the morning to fall asleep on any public property or in any structure not intended for human habitation, with very few exceptions. So that's actually meant that churches are illegal, movie theaters are illegal, offices are illegal, all kinds of places are illegal, but of course the police don't enforce it there. And so it's massively enforced selectively, and it's sort of a, as the police like to say at the city council meetings, a tool for dealing with those the police decide or the cranky neighbors decide they want to deal with. And I say cranky neighbors, although there may be legitimate concerns at different points, there probably are, for, you know, unruly or unsanitary or obstructive camping in some way. But we're talking mostly about survival sleeping, and it's mostly a gentrification issue that has to do with running poor people out of town. And it's been going on for decades. I've been inveighing against it for decades. And that's what the Freedom Sleepers are doing. And they had a benefit. Not really a benefit. That's not accurate. It would have been good if it were a benefit. It was a documentary screening of a 20-minute film made by Israel Dawson recently in a head-on car crash, which really totaled him and almost killed him. But you're going to hear a little bit about that today, perhaps. I did a little interviewing at the documentary showing last night at the Del Mar Theater. It was, as I said, I get a lot of play in there. For some reason, he liked recording what I had to say about the issues of the sleeping ban. I guess I'm a big talker on that issue, as obviously you regular listeners know. And the film is kind of impressive. It's a little out of order for my own critique. The chronology is not 100%, but then again, it's not intended to be a sort of a historical blow-by-blow. It is, I think, an attempt to convey the force of what's going on, the substance of what's going on, and it to awaken people to it. And I was pleased that there was such a large audience, but it was with seven other documentary films that were being shown by the graduate division, I think, of the... I've got their little flyer around here somewhere. The UCSC graduate SOC doc, I think it was called, department, sociology documenting, perhaps. In any case, I didn't stay for most of the films. Actually, the only one I stayed for was the Freedom Sleeper film. I'm restless, and I hit the streets instead and interviewed folks, and I'm going to be playing some of those interviews. But I think the film has got some interesting and some strong images on it of massive numbers of police going after peaceful protesters. And if you look at the whole face of City Hall, it has changed abusively and grotesquely in the last year. They've ripped out all the grass, and they put in these bizarre walkways and strange ornamental plants and cement areas. They've moved the city agendas to the sidewalk so that they can claim that they have the right to close down the whole area at night, because then they don't have to allow you 24-hour access to the agendas, which are required under the Brown Act and are one of the key arguments I'm going to be using in my trial, which is slated for the 24th but is likely to be postponed. Well, it's hard to say how likely it is, but I think it may be postponed in Department 1. If those who are interested in it should check in about a week in Department 1 on the 17th at 10 o'clock, when either I or an attorney will be arguing that the police department has not provided the video that it's supposed to provide, so I can show that I was simply trying to access the agendas, or actually that was one of the things I was trying to do, or claimed I had a right to do, and the police department denied it, that I was also on one of the paths through there where you're allowed to go through the so-called closed areas at night, which again is a pretext for getting rid of homeless protests. Now that may sound like a paranoid statement, but it's actually historically the case, and it was this whole policy of shutting down City Hall was created in 2010 in order to stop a prior protest that had gone on for 3 months, partially at the courthouse and partially at the City Hall area. And it didn't actually have that effect. It just moved everybody off to the sidewalk, although the protest eventually ended. These protests I often feel weary about, and I think, oh, they're too far off the beaten track, and the city council members and the staff couldn't give a shit one way or the other, and nobody sees them, and it's just sort of an exercise in futility and getting tickets that are burdensome, although homeless people don't get these tickets so much, or if they do, they have a recourse. They both have the necessity defense, which is a way if you want to bother, and it's kind of hard to bother if you're spending all your time trying to queue up for jobs, housing, food, and so forth, clothing. But the necessity defense says if you can show that what you were doing was necessary to prevent a greater evil, and sleep deprivation is an evil, particularly in a city with zero walk-in shelter and waiting lists that are full in shelter, you can use the necessity defense. You can also get on the waiting list for the River Street shelter by, get a pencil and paper, and I'll say it again, by calling 459-6644. You should tell your homeless friends or make a note of it yourself when the landlord evicts you. 459-6644. That is a number where if you put your name on their waiting list and there's either an individual or an automatic machine there to do it, supposedly they will dismiss all citations you get, although that has never been thoroughly documented. I've been tried and I've gotten frustrated by the city attorney's office, which seems to take delight in frustrating me on a number of these issues. I suppose that's not surprising. They want to show they got the power. We don't have to pay any attention to you two-bit pipsqueak activists or would-be gadflies, whatever. I've gone on for quite a while. Let's take a musical break. Wait, but before I do, let me just simply say the homeless folks who are around town, not just at the protest, if they're on this waiting list at 459-6644, you give your name, and I suggest you also give a phone number for them to call you back and confirm you're on the waiting list, and then you have to call back every 3 days to keep on the waiting list. And that means that the city attorney is supposed to be checking the number of tickets that come in with the list every month, and then dump all the tickets discard them that are also duplicated on the waiting list, because that's the city's way of protecting itself from a lawsuit, because the lawsuit could say, look, you're creating cruel and unusual punishment penalties for homeless people because you're arresting them or citing them or waking them up in the middle of the night for sleeping when they have no legal place to go. And that's been the case for decades, of course, and it's never had much impact on the city council, which couldn't care less for poor people in spite of its claims that it does, in spite of its token facilities, in spite of its homeless lack of services center that no longer serves meals to people who come in there unless you're in their program, and I'm told will no longer allow you showers or any other access, even if you have an ID card, but unless you're in their programs. That's what I was told recently. I think it was yesterday or the day before. So they are continuing the crackdown, just as local charities and churches, such as the Red Church, are continuing their crackdown, which, though they've created their own little 20 people get a spot every night program, 20 people out of 1,500 isn't such a hot record, but you can say, well, it's better than nothing. Yeah, it is for those 20 people. But for the general problem, it's a drop in the bucket, and considering the resources of churches around towns, it's diddly squat. So let's be honest about it. No, I'm not going to provide any resources to homeless people to sleep in the room that I live in or the rooms that I live in, but I do feel entitled to be able to talk about these issues because they exist, because they're important, because these are society requirements. They are not a function of individual charity. They really should be a function, of course, of people getting together to create their own protective encampments, if necessary. And that's what happens in some cities, usually in cities that have had some successful legal support for one thing or another, like in Fresno and Portland and Seattle. And I'm hoping to have a report from Brent Adams on his latest Sanctuary Cities or Sanctuary Tent Cities tour that he's done. Recently, Brent and I don't agree on a lot of things. His denunciations of activists at different times, I think, are really counterproductive and obnoxious and divisive. But he is also quite a documentarian. You can see his stuff online, which if he's not busy engaging in super promotion of the Warming Center project he has and the other Sanctuary Village project he has, which is fine, but it smacks a lot of commercial advertising to me eventually. He does have a lot of stuff where he is concerned about abuses against poor people. He publicized the smackdown, dropping a man face first onto the cement or letting him fall there, that happened a couple years ago, that even the Sentinel carried after he presented the video of it because he happened to be there. And he's also videoed repression against me at City Hall by several mayors. Matthews, I think Lane, and Lynn Robinson. So now, having said all that, and I'll let people know that the Freedom Sleepouts, the one thing they do provide is a space where, while theoretically people across the city can use, and actually what they do is they can use these defenses, necessity defense or sign up on the waiting list to avoid sleeping tickets. A lot of people just haven't got the time or energy to do that. They just start accruing tickets, and they get dozens and dozens of tickets, some of them. Dreamcatcher, one of the locals who's been around for a long time, gives me the tickets every time I see him. So I'm looking at a fat sheath of yellow pieces of paper that he's given me, 20 or 30 or 40, I'm not sure how many, and he's gotten more, I think. In fact, we're thinking of having a contest to see who's been abused the most by the city for, you know, not getting up as quickly as they should or being in a place that the city has been patrolling and has decided it's going to make an example of you. Because it is true that it's a relatively small number of people actually get citations every night. But now, it's time for some music.
Michael Brown went down, lay there, stayed there, 4 hours, so the powers of the powers of be. This is that beauty up, 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 all the way up, this is the misty rain. Tanks in the cities, tear gas in our eyes, your average police folks are almost always lies. Military occupies the ground, communities, has anything really changed? Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Oscar Grant, and Michael Brown. If the list gets any longer, the phone system is the night. Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Oscar Grant, and Michael Brown. If the list gets any longer, the phone system will go down. Wives and children traumatized, why are you giving up some other
Let's add the names of Alex Nieto, Jessica Williams, and, of course, from San Francisco, Mario Woods, unarmed people shot down by police. I'm going to read a little story about that, but before I do, I'll just mention that that last song was by Dave Lippmann. We're going to hear more from him from his album, You Don't Own the World, and I like his stuff. The name of that song was Hands Up, Don't Shoot, which is what Richard Quigley always suggested people do, and which he has done on a number of occasions, and not in a quiet voice. If a police officer approaches you in a way that seems inappropriate, shouting loudly, don't shoot, don't shoot, with your hands up loudly as a way of making the police accountable for understanding the kind of potential threats they have in terms of when they attempt to intimidate the community, members of the community, particularly poor people in the community. I haven't used that approach. I tend to use a different approach. I whip out a audio recorder and start recording and asking my own questions. And the answer in dealing with police, by the way, is you don't answer questions, you ask them. You have no responsibility to answer their questions. You may get into trouble. You may anger them. They may falsely arrest you. And that's something you have to consider. But the way to answer a question is with another question. Am I under arrest? Am I being detained? Am I free to go? And if you are, then you slowly walk away. If you're not, then you say, what's the charge? And I'd like to speak to an attorney before, even if you don't have one, you don't expect to be able to pay one, before I say anything. Although I'd like to ask some questions of you. Who ordered this arrest? How many people have you arrested people for sleeping tonight? I can think of a number of questions. Actually, I can't right now, but give me a few minutes and I probably could. Here's a story in the socialistworker.org, how the people fired the San Francisco Police Department chief. And it's a writer, Bruno Ruviaro, and it was written about a month ago, May 24th, a little less. San Francisco Police Chief Greg Suhr finally resigned May 19th after months of growing pressure for him to go. Mayor Ed Lee had backed Sugar all along in spite of angry controversy about recent killings by San Francisco police and a scandal about racist and homophobic texts sent by cops that made national news. Then on May 19th, a cop fatally shot Jessica Williams, an unarmed 29-year-old black woman, inside the car she was driving in the Bayview neighborhood. The details of this shooting and the name of the cop who perpetrated it have yet to emerge. That's interesting. Well, the story was written only 5 days later. I think the name of the cop may be out now. But the murder of another unarmed black person was the final straw. What made Lee change his mind was not just that police reform wasn't progressing fast enough, as he said in his statement announcing Suhr's resignation. Lee is the mayor again. In reality, Lee realized that dealing with yet another crisis in the aftermath of police murder would be easier without Suhr than with him. But the foundation for Lee's decision was laid by months of sustained popular pressure in the form of demonstrations, marches, community organizing, and a hunger strike. Amid these protests, the preliminary findings of the district attorney's Blue Ribbon panel, charged with reviewing the SFPD's practices and policies, suggested that the department was disproportionately using stop-and-frisk policing in black and Latino communities and lacking in basic accountability and transparency. The panel's findings further ratcheted up pressure on the political establishment as it has strained to head off more protests. Jessica Williams tragically joins a growing list of black and brown residents murdered by the SFPD in recent years, including Alex Nieto, Amilcar Perez-Lopez, Mario Woods, and Louis Gongora. After an SFPD officer killed Mario Woods on December 2nd of last year, the Justice for Mario Woods Coalition was formed. Meeting every week since then, the coalition is bringing together a number of local organizations and individuals in the fight against police brutality. The movement has grown as it has made connections with other local groups and coalitions fighting against police brutality, such as the Justice for Alex Nieto Coalition. One of the major strengths of the Mario Woods Coalition has been the consistency and clarity of their three demands: charge the cops with murder, hold an independent investigation, and fire Chief Suhr. From disrupting Mayor Lee's inauguration to marching to Super Bowl City, the demand to fire Suhr has been front and center in the movement. Then on April 21st, a group of five members of the Mario Woods Coalition went on a hunger strike in front of the police station in the Mission neighborhood in San Francisco, with crowds gathering in support almost every day. The Frisco Five, as they became known, saw their health deteriorate for 17 days as the mayor ignored their demand to fire Suhr. By May 11th, after the Frisco Five were hospitalized, four members of the Board of Supervisors echoed the calls of protesters saying the city should begin searching for a new police chief, which all goes to show San Francisco is a much more liberal community than Santa Cruz, and of course it has a much broader population, and there are some large populations of oppressed people, in spite of the gentrification process happening there, that some of whom are willing to stand up, and many of whom are willing to support those who stand up. That's my own addenda to this article. It took the untimely death of another innocent black resident at the hands of an SFPD officer to finally convince the mayor that he could no longer avoid calling for Suhr's resignation. The people fired SFPD Chief Suhr was the apt headline of a blog post published on the Justice for Alex Nieto website. Suhr's career is pocked by a long list of past misdeeds, lies, and cover-ups. That someone with such a record got to keep his job as police chief for so long speaks volumes about the systematic racism and corruption of the police as an institution. And I'll read you a little of that. There's a kind of a link on that story. The Many Scandals of Police Chief Sir. It's a story written December 16th last year. The amount of shit that has rolled off the San Francisco Police Chief Greg Sir's back would have buried many a less well-connected and less politically savvy top cop long ago. Sir's tenure as a police leader has been a scandal written as they come, from Fajita Gate to racist text messages, and yet somehow the St. Ignatius University of San Francisco, fourth-generation San Francisco pedigreed Sir, keeps managing to come up as squeaky clean-looking as his shiny bald head. But Sir's quick defense of the police shooting of Mario Woods, the 26-year-old African-American Bayview resident who died in a barrage of SFPD gunfire after allegedly extending his right arm in the direction of one of the at least 10 officers surrounding him, a narrative that has been called into question by bystander video of the incident, could be finally his undoing. Well, it wasn't, but the Jessica Williams killing was, apparently. Calls for Sir's resignation or firing grow louder by the day, leading many to question how long he can hold on. Still, given his history in the department, perhaps the real question is, how did he last until now? 2003. Deputy Chief Sir is charged with allegedly conspiring to obstruct the investigation into the case of three off-duty cops beating up a man over a bag of fajitas. That was called Fajita Gate. A judge eventually threw out Sir's indictment. 2005, demotion number one. Then Chief Heather Fong reassigned Sir from the head of patrol to guarding the city's water supply, reportedly for mishandling a G8 protest that left a cop with a fractured skull. 2009, demotion number two. Sir is demoted to captain after failing to file a report after a female friend told Sir she'd been attacked by a boyfriend. 2011, Sir is selected chief by the newly elected mayor, Ed Lee, rewarded perhaps for his past misdeeds. That's what happened to Officer Butchie Baker. He was promoted to sergeant. He was switched to detective, promoted to declared officer of the year, and then shortly thereafter promoted to sergeant. Butchie Baker, he gets a lot of publicity as the guy who got shot in this bungled house arrest. He and Elizabeth Butler, they're the heroes of the last three years from the police department. But he's better known among homeless folks as an abusive, particularly malicious officer. And, of course, he was accused by 10 women of fondling or inappropriate touching in a public press conference back in 1990-91, thereabouts. So, getting back to San Francisco in this article, 2013, Sir is sued for retaliation by an SFPD lawyer who recommended his firing for mishandling the 2009 incident, and whom he fired 2 weeks after being named chief. The city settled the lawsuit in March 2015 for $725,000. So, in other words, this lawyer who was fired by the police department, by Sir, and because he criticized Sir, the then police chief, sued the city and won $725,000. December 2014, drug testers skimming supply in crime lab jeopardizes thousands of cases, but whistleblower says the SFPD knew about the trouble for years. February 2015, San Francisco Police Department officers fatally shoot Amilcar Perez Lopez. Sir's defense of the shooting that Perez Lopez was charging officers with a knife is belied by an autopsy showing he was shot in the back. March 2015, exposure of racist text messages exchanged by more than a dozen SFPD cops jeopardizes thousands of cases and reveals a troubling culture inside the rank and file. April 2015, federal public defenders cast doubts on a Tenderloin drug sting that only indicted black people, despite surveillance video showing people of other races attempting to sell drugs to undercover cops. June 2015, Sir draws criticism for declining to pursue grant money to clear a backlog of rape kits, then reverses his position and pledges to get the job done. Santa Cruz has had the same problem in the past, too, as exposed by Julian Greenside. I'm not sure what the same situation is now. It used to have a really bad record. Again, something you don't hear discussed either in the media or in public generally. July 2015, most of the political fallout from Kate Steinle's murder fell on Sheriff Ross Mirkarimi. Mirkarimi, I believe it is. But the gun that killed her was stolen from a Bureau of Land Management car in the city. Police searched but are unable to find the gun until it is used to kill Steinle. That's an issue that I've talked about a little bit, because the gun that was used killed Steinle by a ricochet bullet from a guy, from an immigrant who was then accused of having been released inappropriately and then gone out and gotten murderous, when in fact, apparently what he did was he stole a gun from the Bureau of Land Management, dropped it on the ground, and the bullet ricocheted and killed this Kate Steinle. And it was used as a hysterical rallying cry, somewhat similar to needle hysteria here in Santa Cruz, needle mania, as I call it. And then December 2015, this author writes, Mario Woods is shot and killed by five SFPD officers. Will Sir's quick defense of the shooting finally be his undoing? And as I said before, no, but Jessica Williams' shooting was. And that's two articles. One is The Many Scandals of Police Chief Greg Sir, and that's on the Socialist, actually that's from the San Francisco Weekly, but the link, if you ever want to review this stuff, is How the People Fired the SFPD Chief by Socialist at socialistworker.org, if you want to check that out. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and we're going musical again.
Hey, politician, check your position. Do you work for all of us or for the big bad banks? This plutocracy is no democracy. Who by the rich? Good God, no thanks. Don't touch your hedge funds. Don't touch that money. You leave us homeless and bankrupt. I wonder when you will be moving to your new mansion in the nearest federal pen. You lead the nation. Don't take a vacation. From killing jobs, hoarding jobs, the ill-gotten gains. Shift your ambition to revolution. The system's clinically insane. You hold us hostage with stocks and bondage. Basic rights don't mean shite to the shareholding class. If you don't wise up, we might just rise up and plant our feet right in your pants. You kill community with such impunity, but we won't let you get away with it. One more day we're gonna build a better future, and we're gonna start right now. So politicians, check your position. Do you work for all of us or for the big bad banks? This plutocracy is no democracy, ruled by the rich. Good God, no thanks.
And that was another one by David Lippman from You Don't Own the World, Chow Inequality. Let's now actually hear some street interviews that I thought I was going to play at the beginning of the show, but I'm going to start playing them now, and maybe we'll actually get to hear a few.
From Denver on Pacific Avenue, it's Monday the 6th of June, and nice looking jewelry display, which will be illegal on June 24th. Would you make this stuff yourself?
Yeah, sure.
And how's business?
It's quiet.
I see we had two armed police officers approach you. What was the nature of your conversation with them?
It was good.
Did they admire your work?
No.
Did they give you any new rules to be concerned about?
No.
Did they buy a little jewelry, perhaps?
No, nothing.
All you're telling me is no. I mean, this is a very negative. What's your name?
Guillaume.
And you are?
Jessica.
I'm Robert, by the way.
Nice to meet you, Robert.
Pleasure, Jessica. So how long have you been out here?
2 days.
And at this particular spot?
A few hours.
And no hassles, no move-along stuff?
No, everything good.
Any customers?
Quiet, just one. Just one cell.
You're a patient man.
Yeah, I'm a patient.
You're a patient woman.
Yeah.
Have you seen anything downtown that you want to comment on that you may have noticed because your eyes are on the street?
Have you what?
Have you seen anything happening downtown you think of as interest?
We just arrived, I don't know.
And where are you from?
From Mexico.
What part?
Durango, the north.
Part of a large drug cartel, perhaps? We aren't getting a direct answer here, folks. We better keep a close eye on these two. Anything you want to say to the free radio people out there?
Say hello and...
Hello, people. Good day.
Hello and goodbye.
Hello and goodbye.
Kisses and big hugs. Big hugs.
And big hugs.
Yeah.
I got you. And we've been talking with?
Jessica.
And?
Guillaume.
Thank you, Guillaume and Jessica.
Have a good day.
And you too. Should be on free radio. There goes the pseudo cable car. And so also you were telling me that this is in part survival work?
Yeah, in part. I do few work, but in part it's my work.
You have many, you sort of, how would you describe your merchandise? You can see earrings with a lot of Day of the Dead kind of stuff on it.
Inspiring of Mexico culture and yeah.
We'll build a wall, so watch out. Anyway, thank you, and hope you listen in. And if you got more reports, my number is on the card. Just call in.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Beer in front of, I guess it's Marini's, watching a man who's doing some selling. And how's it going? How's the selling going?
Hello.
Free radio here.
Free radio?
Yes, sir.
It's okay. Everything so-so.
And no hassles from police, no hassles from hosts?
Nope. We have a business license now, man. We don't worry about hassles when you have a license.
Quite so, except on June 24th when it becomes illegal to sell anything like this.
No, not when you create it yourself, sir.
You can't create hats yourself. I just wanted to let you know that I'm not an enforcer. I'm an opponent of the law, but it's true. You should check it out.
Yeah, you could create hats yourself.
Oh, you do, but that, they don't. It's banned anyway.
Well, I'm not worried about it, man. I'm all good by the city of Santa Cruz, but you have a good day. Thank you.
And you too. If you want to fight it, though, you got to do something now before it becomes law on the 24th. So be advised about that.
I'll be fine, sir.
Good. Good.
You know what?
No.
I believe that I'm okay. Thank you.
Right on. I hope you are.
I'll be here on the 24th. Thank you, sir.
Right on. Hope so. So I'm here talking to a musician in front of the Palomar. With a, looks like $1.50, or is it $2 in your case?
$1.50.
$1.50, yeah. 50-cent piece, a rare thing to see. Mm-hmm. And you have a guitar, and you're standing next to a man with a scooter. Is that what that thing is?
It is a scooter. A Razor scooter.
And is this looks like a kiddie scooter. What is a man like you, a mature individual, doing with a scooter like this? Is that a throwback to earlier childhood?
I really don't like walking.
There you have it. The explanation that defies explanation. And your name, sir?
Zach.
Of course. And Zach, you're inside the blue box. At least your display device is. And you are leaning on the lamppost outside the display box.
True.
Are you aware that this is not illegal at the moment, but will become illegal on June 24th?
I wasn't aware because I haven't read the new ordinances yet.
Well, the thrill awaits you.
Yeah, I do suppose so.
Indeed. How long have you been out here today?
It's a good question. Probably 45 minutes. I probably played for about 15 of those minutes because I would keep talking to people. Questionable characters.
Not much of a businessman, apparently.
No, not too much. I'm mostly out here for the fun of it right now.
Now, are you interested in joining the Street Vendors and Artists Association that wants to fight this bullshit that's coming out on the 24th?
I'm interested to an extent, but got a pretty busy schedule these days.
I gotcha. So if you'd like to be included, we can put your email on the list and you can see the latest machination.
I believe I am on the list, or I'm on the Huff list.
Oh, well, then you probably will hear about it one way or another.
Sounds good. Well, you know, I especially, do you know when the city council meeting?
City council meeting is a week from tomorrow.
Okay, well, I'll try my best to be there, but, you know,
they already passed the ordinance. I guess the resolution will be passed that specifies that there'll be 30 spaces and where they'll be. That's the only thing that's coming up on the council that I know of on this issue.
I see. Yeah, I mean, I'm working full time, but I can try my best to be there. Let's see. I mean, last year, you know, we went to the same game, and now there's something not so positive I would have to say.
Oh, dear. What would you have to say about that?
Well, last year, similar thing. They made the ordinances a little bit stricter, a lot stricter. It was when they created these boxes.
Right.
And, you know, I went to the city council meetings and, along with 30 or so other individuals.
And they ignored you completely.
They absolutely did. They voted unanimously against us, except for Micah Posner. But
this time he also voted against you, so he's gotten worse.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it wasn't like it was doing much good in the first place. Especially, you know, some of them, like Cynthia Chase, who I played for one of her fundraisers when she vowed in front of me to protect the interests of the poor and homeless community in Santa Cruz.
She disappointed you.
She did. Yeah. She really did.
I'm afraid so, yeah. I'm afraid the nature of the political offices in Santa Cruz are such that they tend to do that for various reasons. Some because they get funding, some because their ears are open to the merchants, but not to the rest of us, and some because they want to persuade the rest of the council to go along with what they're doing. I think that by abandoning a principled position, they might get a few crumbs out of it.
Yeah, well, I hope those crumbs taste good.
Me too. And we've been talking with
Zach.
And, of course, listening avidly is
Nathan.
Anything you want to say, Nathan, about any of this?
I'm also against this. I have only played on the streets once, but I had no idea about any of this. This is the first time I've noticed one of these blue boxes, and I think it's just really terrible to see them restricting it like that.
I agree. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
No problem. Should be on free radio Thursday night. And across the street from where I'm standing at what is known uncharitably as the Rittenhouse Mausoleum, you hear the amplified sounds of a electrical guitar player in, I guess it's on the private property of the mausoleum, although it's empty at the moment, except for the one store on the corner, Rip Curl, which has taken up residence there. Hey, no laughing downtown.
Sorry about that.
All right, then.
Control myself.
Excellent. There. I'm going to keep these people in line here. Well, we have a few tables up ahead in the O'Neill's area. Generally, there's kind of a barren scene here on Pacific Avenue. But I will continue my search for truth, so to speak. There's a man in a wheelchair who's keeping an eye on a display device which is partially in and partially out of the blue boxes. How goes it? You've had better days. A quick interview for free radio, if you wish. Topic is being hassled by the police or not being hassled by the police on Pacific Avenue.
Sure. I think that it's troublesome, that it's not a very good use of police discretion. It also takes away from the culture of Santa Cruz.
I have to agree with you.
Yeah, it's troublesome because there's many people that come through town that are artists that only feel comfortable being on the Center Garden Ball because there's regular Santa Cruzians that have made that space safe and open for people to come and enjoy the culture and the different things available.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more. I see you have a small table with jewelry. Is this stuff you've made? Are you watching this for someone else? What's the deal?
Yeah, I'm just sitting watching the table while Steve goes and grabs some coffee.
Is anyone watching you as far as you know?
No, absolutely not. This is just good neighbors helping each other out.
Excellent. So in other words, but you haven't been hassled by the police. I see here comes the probable jeweler guy.
Yeah, here he comes. But I think they've had to cool down after they got a bit overzealous.
The police or the jewelers?
The police.
Well, that's good. I know that they ran off with Alex and Joff on a couple of occasions, the painters.
Yes, Alex and Joff specifically are a good example of why the police should not be using.
The reason this fellow sounds so quiet is because I think he has some sort of either serious laryngitis or some sort of congenital throat problem. He was all bundled up and clearly seems to be sincerely communicating that to say this is not an affectation. This is how he talks. Maybe this is obvious to everyone else, but maybe I'm just naturally suspicious. But I want to make clear to the audience that that's what's going on out there. So this is a fellow who is working with a rather prominent street jeweler who's regarded by some members of the city council as being the primary motivation behind these anti-jeweler ordinances, because he's had occasionally two tables, sometimes three, next to each other, as though that was some sort of major crime, and has got a lot of stones on his table. He also, as you'll probably hear, does not want to be interviewed unless I pay him money for it. So we don't really get a strong interview from him. Sometimes he comes out of his financial shell, if you will, and talks, but not always. Getting back to it.
Picket books and truncheons?
Yeah, it's just a bad way to go when they're adding art to our area and actually creating it in front of the public. That's why people come here instead of stay in San Jose or wherever they come from.
I've heard that often, and could well be true, and it certainly is. It's why one of the things I like about Santa Cruz. And we've been talking with
Zach,
anything you want to add?
Thank you for doing your due diligence.
Yeah.
And I hope people listen to the radio.
And I hope people can hear you, because not only is your voice soft, but the wind howls on this damn street, and it tends to interfere with my recordings. But thank you and good luck.
Thank you.
We can work together, we can always win this fight. There were
too bad those lyrics aren't a little more audible. I apologize, but you can hear some of them, and they're worth hearing, and I liked them, and I hope you liked them, too. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and the name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Let's get back to Benders on Pacific Avenue, what they've got to say about this and that, before they all get swept away on June 24th.
So we would like to interview this well-known jewelry artist downtown, but it's just a little too costly. A little. He's a generous and outspoken advocate of many things. And I have heard from him. This could be a rumor that he is going to be not only presenting jewelry, but presenting ways of making jewelry and making wraps, as well as. What, traditional Santa Cruz dances, perhaps?
You got $15?
No. Wait, the prices are dropping. It used to be $20. What's going on here?
Give you a discount.
Discount. Now, I'm afraid, I won't insist you pay me, but I will not pay you. But, you know,
The interview is only going to proceed if a financial transaction is preceded by the interview.
An honest man and a mercenary scumbag as well. What can you say?
Time $18.
If I did, I wouldn't give it away to a tea drinker like yourself.
Come on, I'm trying to save money.
I know you are. I wish you luck, and if you want, you'll be on Free Radio. Actually, whether you want to or not, you'll be on Free Radio starting on Thursday, along with everyone else.
And tell Chip to stay in his lane.
Nicely put. Thank you, sir. He's sort of a chip off the old blockhead, as
we like to say. Well, you know, there's more to life than just money. And the,
Wait a minute, time is money, I just heard someone say.
Yes, time is money, yes.
That's right. So let's not forget that, all right?
True, but there's more to life than time or money.
Nicely put. And I will leave you, and I will leave our audience pondering that fact.
Peace and love.
And the same to you. Thank you.
And the reference to Chip has to do with, I think, the guy who is the Downtown Association go-to boy, or gopher, actually. It's more of a gopher than a go-to boy. He is a gopher boy, and I speak sort of derogatorily about him because he's the front man for the Downtown Association, previously an artist. Who knows? Maybe he's still an artist. He joined forces and took money from the Downtown Association to represent them at city council, run around town representing them. He organizes the parades. He's a spokesperson for their point of view, which, unfortunately, regarding poor people, really sucks, since it seems to be the merchants, or at least the Downtown Association, which is part of the merchant class downtown, pretty conservative and control-freaky part of the merchants downtown, has decided it wants to run every jeweler off Pacific Avenue. Can't even buy a permit anymore, I believe, for that. Making it a defining suddenly everything that isn't First Amendment oriented, specifically like political stuff or your own painting or your own artwork, but not your own jewelry, as a form of criminal activity. And that's what it's going to be. It'll be coming June 23rd or 24th, thereabouts. It's a sad thing, and Chip sucks.
Back. And again, we're walking close to our amplified music man next to the alcove of the Rittenhouse Mausoleum, which is being sold by Cushman & Wakefield or rented.
I don't stay long here, didn't like the quality of the music or the lyrics for that matter, but it's interesting that if you play in the alcoves, but not on the sidewalk, that's private property, and so in theory, you can get permission from the owner to do that. In practice, people who have gotten permission, let's say from Dale Williams Jewelers, have still been harassed by the police after hours, for being there. And it's a difficult situation for anybody who wants to be on Pacific Avenue. Depending upon the temperature of the police department at the time, which may have some relation to the number of complaints they're getting or may not. It's never been clear in terms of any real sense of either inside account from the police department or the merchant community or any kind of documented indication through the instructions the police department has received or the number of complaints and who gives the complaints and so forth. But we do know that it was the merchant community almost entirely, but we do know it was the merchant community that essentially put together the pressure of some of the merchants in the merchant community that wanted to make these really profound bans on Pacific Avenue that began 22 years ago actually, with the 1994 downtown ordinances, which were essentially directed against homeless people sitting near shops, not blocking the sidewalk, not blocking the entrances, not even blocking the display windows, but anywhere within 6 feet of a shop. And that 6 feet no-go zone became expanded to 14 feet in 2002, and then it became expanded to be 14 feet bans from all kinds of other things like benches and telephones and intersections and so forth, so that now there's a very small fraction of the sidewalk it's actually legal to sit on, and that has become even smaller with these performance pens, as I call them, these blue boxes that have been on the sidewalk now for about 2 years, but will now be even more restrictive. There will be less of them. There will be less allowance as to what you can do in them. There will be a complete ban on one of the main draws of Pacific Avenue, the jewelers. I guess the merchants don't like it. And maybe Micah Posner doesn't like it. He said he doesn't like somebody wrapping a wire around a rock and calling it art. It seems as much art to me as anything else, depending on how it's done. But not anymore. Not starting at the end of June.
Tones of, I don't know, strong singing on Pacific Avenue, or who knows what. So earlier I was talking to a merchant who prefers to remain anonymous, that he sees the downtown disintegrating as the, I kind of interpret it as the street life is disappearing. He said he's seen, also he's really referring to the broader developments of mixing residence and business downtown. He says that, 1010 Pacific doesn't have people staying for more than a year. That's a large apartment complex at Cathcart and Pacific. He says that the North Pacific apartments or condos are having all kinds of trouble finding anybody to go in there. Howdy. He says that he says numerous things. And the wind, I hope, is not blowing away what I'm saying. Chilly down here. A shade quickly descends after, well, on the university side of the street. It's probably shaded a lot of the day. Don't say. And particularly after 5 o'clock, shadows begin to deepen. Here at the Red Church, where there's some kind of service going on inside, I'm talking with
Kevin O'Connor.
Kevin, we're standing by your car. You have a pooch that we've...
Pallidactyl cat, tortoise pallidactyl, six toes, and a Hemingway, Ernest Hemingway, the breeds of cats, being a mouser, you know, six toes on each foot.
Why do you call it a pooch? Probably because I didn't look at the whole thing. I saw the hair, but not the rest of the body. So,
anyways, Gladys and I have been living in this vehicle for the last 3 months, on 27 lists in this county alone for housing. And no bites yet, but still waiting for those phone calls. kept going back. And they, you know, I thought, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the oil. And come to find out, you turn out to be a pest to them. And they just say, hey, you know what, 18 months to 5 years, you know, don't come back.
Really?
Yeah. You know, it was unfortunate, you know.
Who told you that?
Guy at there at the Palomar. And plus, he was the only one that wanted $50 just to get put on the list.
Did you give him $50?
No, I did not. But I still bug him every time I get, you know, every time I get, you know. I mean, I'm not going to give up.
What other places have you been trying to go to?
A place called, gosh, I have them all right here.
And he's reaching into his car to get the list? Or actually to get a an iPod of some kind? Or checking out the...
Okay. Hotline that I call. Here we go. Here we go. Blackburn House, Center Street. The Bronx. No. Catholic Charity. CFSC Housing. That would be like the HUD program. I've been calling Claudio Locatelli. He's got several, you know, apartments for rent in the, you know, the Beach Flats area. Call him. People just in general, you know, I try to get out there and, you know, let people know what's going on with me. I deal with the Gray Bears, Heartland America, Housing Rent on Columbia, Housing Authority, Independent Soul, which is in Watsonville. That's another housing project I've gone to. Joyce Newbert had turned me on to apartments in Seventeenth Avenue, right by that dollar store across the way. They just did some more, you know, housing they added on. And they only had the list open for a day and a half. And I was fortunate enough to get the high sign and get over there and get on that list.
How long have you been on that list?
Close to a year now. 6 months to a year, yeah.
And that list is what to get?
Get the interview first. And then after you get the interview, you bring the right paperwork, you know, your financial, you know, show them your income and this and that and the other. And what's cool about these places is that they only take one third of your income.
I see. And how many spaces are usually available?
Not many. I haven't gotten any hits since February when I was moved out of my room. February 29th, I was here at the Red Church here on Center Street. And, you know, I was doing my trip that I do down here, helping feed the homeless, sick, and the dying. And the landlord moved me out that night.
Who's the landlord?
His name was Jim Thompson.
And this is a private landlord,
yeah,
a church landlord?
Private landlord. He has a running ad in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. He is constantly, you know, having turnovers. He's made a 5-bedroom house into like about a 11-bedroom house. He's rented out the living rooms, turned them into bedrooms. And little nooks and crannies about the house, you know. He had one guy living upstairs behind the bar. Beautiful view, you know, $1 million view and all that. But, you know, he had a mother that was really unstable. She attacked me twice with a knife. And then that's when I got my very first social worker. And she goes, Kevin, why didn't you, have a report this to the cops? And I'm looking at Jim Thompson, who is a little younger than me, and thinking, hey, that's his mom. You know, she's elderly, she's old, and she shouldn't be doing this. And she still drives, and she's crazy. She doesn't speak a word of English, and has been here since 1960. Had one of the first grocery stores that I recall.
How long have you been here?
I've been here 63 years. Yeah. And never had a problem getting housing again before. I've had houses. I was fortunate in my younger years to have a house that I bought or was buying. And, you know, through my own, you know, my own doings, shortcomings, character defects that I had, lost them in the shuffle, you know, to maybe say an older brother. I come from a real unstable family, you know, but I know now that I came into this world by myself and I'll be leaving this way.
Have you finished listing all the different places?
No, I haven't. I can continue.
I think it's helpful to people, even though it's this list too at the same time.
There's another one called El Nuevo Sol. It's at the end of Barson Street here in Santa Cruz. There's a lawyer eviction service, which I'm doing, going through, because the housing authority or the lawyer referral service, they pointed me in the direction to a small claims court because of what this gentleman did to me, which was really uncool, I thought.
The eviction.
He says, no, you're not evicted, you're not evicted. You know, and I said, well, Jimmy, I mean, God, you threw my stuff out in the street and stuck it all in a storage locker that I can't afford, your public storage. You know, so Phil Drive, across the street from the Skyview Drive-In, or the flea market now, you know? When you threw my stuff in there, you broke antique drawers, you just shoved all my stuff, all my belongings, you know, family's heirlooms from my father's side, that can't be replaced.
This was prompted by the involvement of the possibility of his mother being criticized for the police?
Well, no, she wasn't being criticized. She was... I was being criticized by her, if anything, in her bent warped mind. You know,
why? She assaulted you, sir.
Yeah, she's assaulted me, spit in my face.
So the fear of, you think his fear of you informing on her to the police had him evict you, or?
No, the police came out several times.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him it was pouring rain this year, and I was put out on February 29th. It was a Monday, which I come here every day, every Monday. And, you know, just volunteer, you know, and get to do some fellowshipping. And, you know, who knows? Maybe I'll get turned on to a place to live, you know. And unfortunately, he had just taken it upon himself to move me out.
Did he tell you why?
Yeah, well, you know, what happened is during the rains, you know, he had built a deck on top of my bedroom. And he, you know, it created a leak. Which created a leaked puddle on top of my ceiling, and my ceiling falling in, caving in on me, and had to have buckets up and around. Three buckets in my bedroom, and then of course the black mold came, ended up in the hospital. And you know, all along the senior people at the, you know, off Schuylkill Avenue, I can't recall, it's a pretty popular place to go to help seniors with legal matters, senior legal. And they heard him talking to me. I was in their office that Monday afternoon trying to figure out what to do. And they said, well, Kevin, I'm just going to move you out. And I said, no, Jimmy, don't go in my room. And the lawyers that worked there, that lawyer, senior lawyer's place, said, hey, if he goes in your room, man, that's it. He's breaking the law. And I held my phone up, a speaker phone on speaker, and he said, well, I'll just move you out. I said, Jimmy, don't go in my room. I have somebody from the fellowship here at the church who's going to let me use their garage, and two men are going to move me out tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I got home, most of my stuff was in storage that he had stuck and slammed in there, and the rest of it was thrown out on the street and on the curb. So the senior legal place handed me a paper to go to take him to court for small claims court. You know, and I'm thinking, God, this is really uncomfortable. You know, I'm trying to look at my side of this, you know, and keep my side of the street clean. And you know what? He was just unethical. You know, he was an immoral man. And, you know, he took advantage of people. Like I said, you know, he has a running ad that goes into the Sentinel, renting it from this beautiful five-room bedroom house. You know, it's a billion-dollar view. You have a view of the beach flats area and the boardwalk, because it is beautiful. But to go through his abuse and neglect...
You didn't take him to small claims court.
No, not as of yet. It's been...
What's your deadline?
Yeah, 3 to 5 years.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
That's what I was told.
Interesting.
And like I'm trying to say...
I mean, more like 6 months, but I don't know.
Well, I don't know. You may know more than I do.
I have not taken anyone to small claims court in a long, long time.
I've never done that. I've never sued anybody.
No, I would find out about it if you really want to make sure your options are still open.
Yeah, right. And I have. And that's what they've told me at Senior Legal. And like I said, they handed me the paperwork to take him to small claims court. And, you know, they heard him on my cell phone, on speakerphone, saying, "I'm moving you out." And I said, "Don't touch my daughter."
I got you.
And they heard him say, "Well, fuck it, I'm doing it."
Any other organizations you want to point out that you applied
to? Redwood Commons. That's on Soquel. Right next to that Valero gas station. You have to look for it a little bit. Independence in Watsonville. Social workers. Here we go. Yeah, let me see here. I'm going through my phone right now. Nuevo Sol at 111 Barson Street in Santa Cruz. Redwood Commons on Soquel Avenue. Santa Cruz Legal Research is on Soquel Avenue, Santa Cruz Legal. Let's see here. That's about it for right now that I can, you know, I have a list of them that I'd put to compare, compiled.
That's quite a list. These are the people you've actually called. And
oh, yes, I've been.
You call them pretty regularly.
Regularly.
And you're on the waiting list of most of them.
Yes, and now they're doing this thing where they're saying, well, if you want to get on the list, you've got to come up with $50 or $60. Now, come on, what is that?
And which organizations say this?
That was a Palomar.
Wow.
And the other place. God, I want to say St. George, but I don't think so.
So most of them don't, though.
No, most of them do not. Absolutely.
Well, that's good news. Anyway, I'm going to kind of leave it there unless there's something you want to add.
Oh, no, that's it. It's a, you know,
I think that's a helpful
careful,
update.
Be careful out there. You know.
We've been talking with?
Anybody. Oh, we've been talking with? Mm-hmm. Kevin Conner.
Thanks, Kevin.
My pleasure.
All right.
And the reason that I had that long conversation with him, which may have put everybody to sleep, is he lists the resources that a person genuinely seeking housing, I'm presuming, actually goes through, you know, waiting lists you get on, the kinds of charges you face, the kinds of delays you face. And I think it's also perhaps might be helpful to those who are, you know, in a similar search. So if it is, that's good. If it isn't, well, tough. I thought it was worth putting out anyway, and hope somebody finds it of use.
Howdy, boys. Is that the back and frackin' old train? Right off track by my house. Endangering my spouse, cat, parakeet, boy, I got a tweet I can't afford. The sort of explosive curve that broke there isn't fair. And I don't seem to care. It leaves the North Dakota back and yet that is where they thrill. Our neighborhood is burning black and wind is a spill. 30 trains a week, we're really at the peak. Driven at defilement is that what we seek. When you see a delivery, maybe you should not wait until it blows and it's made it no good. Fracking in the back and our anger must be slacking. Whoosh, 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 stay with the neighborhood. There's gonna be a little party at the basement. We'll be making our case. This train is such a disgrace.
Put it in your face.
We're gonna cry and tell the CSX folks they can't roam. Or our Russian boss, we're gonna send them all home.
And that's the Bakken Fracken Oil Train. Another one by Dave Lippman from his album, You Don't Own the World. still listening, if you're hearing this, to either the direct or the archive broadcast of Free Radio Santa Cruz's best show, Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Well, one of the few I listen to anyway, because I have to. Well, at least I hear myself doing the show. And you are too, if you're listening to this. If you want to get in touch because you have something you want to contribute to the show in terms of some updates, some complaints, some bits of news that you think the community would want to know, give me a call at 423-4833. You can also call to get information about Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'll try to put you on the right track. I'm not a terribly best expert on that, but I do have connections of those who know better than I what's going on. You can also find us some help in locating a transmitter site. As far as I've been told up to now, we are still seeking one because the place where the transmitter site is currently located is likely to be foreclosed upon in the next 2 months. And that was the latest word from the owner, who is in sort of not in despair, but pretty clear that this is, though she's said this numerous times in the past, this is likely to be the actual foreclosure because of attorney bank manipulations of some kind, which I'm not entirely conversant with. So we need a transmitter site, you know, a place to put up an antenna, which would be the side of a house that's two stories, a tree. Those are the two most likely things. We'd hope to put it on top of the county building, but hey, probably wouldn't last long up there. So give us a call, 423-4833, if you have any thoughts on that one. If you have any suggestions, if you have anything to offer, that'd be even better. And now back to the Red Church. That long interview was actually from the front of the Red Church, where I ran into Kevin in his vehicle with his cat that looked like a dog until I looked at it more closely. And then I went inside, or actually stalked the periphery of the Red Church, and chatted with some more people. You get the benefit, or are cursed with the, well, here they are.
I missed the last one.
It's archived.
Oh, wow, really?
You can probably find it.
I'll hook up.
So we're talking with Bob. You say that the East Cliff Shopping Center shady spots were not unmolested today?
Just, you know, not just shady spots. I mean, you go over there and park many times, that little security guard, little woman, decides to come up here and show herself off, and she came over there writing her license number down.
We have
can't
a dog
be parked
in the car.
There.
We have a dog in the car, and that's why we park in the shade. And then I go to my doctor's office, which is, you know, across the parking lot. And when I came back, my husband said that they'd taken down my license plate number. And I went to try to find her to ask her why, but I couldn't find her anywhere. But, you know.
And had you been previously using East Cliff Health Center, whatever it's called?
Yeah, I go to East Cliff Family Health Center. My doctor's there.
And you've been, how long have you been going there?
About a year, year and a half.
And this is the first time you've noticed this happening?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you can't be too careful with your kind.
It seems to be new. It seems to be like a new thing. But
take back Santa Cruz shit. It's mm-hmm. bullshit.
And either of you use MHCAN at all, by the way?
No. Oh, no. No, I've considered going there for a couple of different things, but no, I don't go there.
I'm just wondering, because I'm trying to get some reports on what's going on over there. Again, we've been talking with
Kathy
and
Bob.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Nobody leaves us the place. We got to eat it inside.
I'm going. I'm trying to check my breath, my heart. Okay.
And we have a woman with a plate of food here.
He's
being hustled
please,
back inside
please.
The Red Church by the, I guess, the volunteer security guy who's telling people they can't take food out. How long has this been the case, you know?
Since they've been here. Everything I was just stolen, I'm trying to catch up to them. You know,
we're talking with
Tiger Michelle Belfield. She's in charge.
Michelle
can't take the plate off site. Would you go give me a knife and a fork? I'll just eat it with my fingers. Yeah. And then if you try to stay down at the shelter, the bed bugs, the cellulitis.
Which shelter are we talking?
River Street Shelter, that whole place down there. I miss my housing counselor. I'm thinking whether he likes it or not.
All righty, I'll talk to you. And we've been talking with?
Michelle Beltville.
Of course, who else? Thank you, Michelle.
In fact, what I have observed as well is this, oh, I wouldn't call him overly beefy, but a substantial male guy who's the bouncer and the doorkeeper and so forth, blocking people from leaving the church area where there's a meal. This is the Red Church on Monday evenings, and telling them they can't take their food outside. They must keep their food inside. And they can't take a plate away with them. This is part of sort of the fantasy, bogus notion of a community that is forcefully created by corralling everyone first with religious requirements. Not really requirements. You don't have to pray. You don't have to stand. But it is, it seems to be some people who actually like it too. I want to be honest about that. When I was there last Monday, there were people who, I guess, took the Eucharist, or they were munching these little wafers from the, I guess it was the bishop or whoever was dressed up in robes. It was a woman giving them this communion, I guess is what it is. And there were numerous homeless people I knew lined up to take it. I don't think they got paid to do it. I don't think they felt obliged to do it. I think they wanted to do it. And so you might say that there is a voluntary aspect to all this, and that's certainly true. There's also, however, a somewhat humiliating involuntary aspect, or tiresome at very best involuntary aspect, where you're supposed to hang out for a religious ceremony. And though it's not required, they give out these little tickets that now are, if not required, I would say highly recommended, or supposed to limit the people who are able to get food, or maybe they allow those who have the little tickets, look like theater tickets, to go first. Theater tickets in the old way, where they used to get a little kind of, not the kind of printed out tickets you see now, but the generic tickets. They used to come in big rolls. So the Red Church is becoming more and more repressive, I have to say. Steve Plaich is still smearing those bagels, and the people are still cooking food there, and I'm still running in there and giving announcements. I don't think I gave an announcement this Monday. There wasn't too much to announce. The Freedom Sleepers were the next night, and that's what I usually announce, Tuesday evening Freedom Sleepers, which I encourage people to go check out. But it's sort of sad. Anyway, here's some more from the Monday Chronicles.
So we're talking with
Jeff.
Go ahead, Jeff.
There is an international thing going on. It's picking on Santa Cruz. They're unloading the undesirables. They came from places like Russia. They came from gulags.
Talking about poor people, or
no? They came from Eastern Europe.
So I see you did have a cup of coffee and a bag of popcorn. Has this impacted your work here at the Red Church, or you're using the services here?
Am I using my what?
Well, you know, coming here to get...
Well, I need some food on occasion.
Right.
But these people literally stole my life.
How so?
They're attacking me. They're doing hate crimes against me.
And when was the last time this happened?
Last night.
And what happened?
They swarmed me.
And how many people are we talking about?
We're talking about damn near 10.
Where was this?
Over in Water Street. And Water Street and Water and Ocean.
And what time of day?
About 12 midnight, 2 a.m.
And describe what happened.
They are committing a hate crime. They're not black. They're not Mexican. They are too white.
So
they literally came from South Africa.
And when did you first notice these folks? Last night. In other words, were you sleeping? Were you waking?
I was sleeping.
And what happened?
It's twilight sleep.
And then what happened?
I'm actively aware that they're there.
And what did they do?
They're trying to commit a hate crime.
Which was?
Sex.
Really?
Uh-huh. They're effed up perverts.
This was on you.
I'm not a pervert.
No. Who were they trying to commit the sex crime with?
Me.
Okay.
Want to know why?
Yeah.
It's a cult. They're messing with Santa Cruz's social fabric.
And this was what, on Soquel? No.
Water, it's on Water Street, yeah. Right in front of the jail. Okay? Right in front of the jail.
I hear you. So, anything else happening that concerns you?
My safety.
Mm-hmm.
They sold us out.
They being?
The powers that be.
Well, I agree with you there.
Sam Farr.
Yeah.
Kevin Brown. Yeah. Along with Obama.
Mm-hmm.
They know what's going on. They're floating across. Get a little of this, okay? They're getting around the world a little too fast. It's a spear ball. It's totally automated. They're going from one continent to another. Okay? Germany came up with it. Simons.
My concern is Santa Cruz and what happened to you. And I want to thank you for the update we've been talking with.
Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
As in Mr. Jeff.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Cool.
Now, here's a story that sounds like a paranoid fantasy. And I got no idea whether Jeff was actually assaulted and how much of the story is true. Kind of didn't have the patience to go through it all because I had other people I wanted to interview. But I tried to take these stories at face value, however exaggerated, extreme, or unlikely they may sound, in order to get more details about what the person speaking either believes has happened or is telling me has happened in as clear a way as I can, and leave it up to you to come to your own conclusions. Here's a little music, because we're almost at the end of this show. Was another one from Dave Lippman, We Shall Not Be Declimatized. Sounded a lot like We Shall Not Be Moved, but he had a little plunky, plucky quality to it. So now some clippings. I've often avoided the clippings or missed the clippings or had no time for the clippings. Well, let's see if we can get a few in. These are clippings provided to me by Vision Song Valerie. Thank you, Valerie, for the work putting these things together. And Laura Tucker. Thank you, Laura, for your work on this. Here's one. California Assembly moves to tax marijuana growers. This is an assembly bill which was passed in early June. 60-12, AB2243 authorizes charges of about $10 an ounce for marijuana flowers, $3 an ounce for pot leaves, and $125 an ounce per immature pot plants, in order to raise $77 million annually for local police and environmental cleanup. You know, you tax the gods to feed the devils. It's kind of interesting. Some marijuana activists oppose the taxes as unreasonably high, according to this article, saying the flower tax alone would be 10% of marijuana's value. Democratic Assemblyman Jim Wood of Healdsburg said his proposal was killed at the last minute during negotiations to regulate marijuana last year, and the Senate improved a 15% marijuana sales tax earlier this week. Local governments currently tax pot at 7.5%, so the power to tax is the power to destroy. We have cultivation restrictions coming up next Tuesday at the, I think it's next Tuesday, maybe it's a week from Tuesday. But it's, no, I think it's next Tuesday, but I'm not sure, at the Board of Supervisors. We're going to be talking more about that on Sunday, I hope. Meanwhile, in Baltimore, trials beginning for the third of the killers of Freddie Gray, three of the police officers, the six cops who either through negligence or malice or some mixture of the two stopped a man who was guilty of very little, if anything, and his spine was snapped in the back of a police wagon as they drove him to jail after having brutalized him on the street. The van driver is Officer Caesar Goodson. He faces second-degree murder and other charges, and he also faces buck-passing from fellow officers, according to this AP story, who have already testified in two previous trials that if anyone was to blame, it was Gray's responsibility for driving him because he was the driver. He faces 30 years in prison if convicted of the murder charge. However, the prosecutors have failed to secure a guilty verdict on three straight trials. The first one ended in a hung jury. The second finished with an acquittal on two other officers. They said that Goodson was grossly negligent when he failed to buckle Gray into a seatbelt and call for medical aid. This was back on April 12th of last year. No eyewitnesses and very little physical evidence. Government expects an uphill battle. The real question is, have they been doing anything since? What kind of actions are we seeing on the streets of Baltimore? And I've got no reports on that, although I do listen to the Real News, which is broadcast out of Baltimore. And so it's interesting, though, of course, there's always the upper class and the lower class. And even though people who are liberal to radical tend to think of themselves as like having solidarity with lower class folks, they are not, and as I am not, a lower class person in the sense of being part of a truly oppressed class. And so it's really hard to understand or have real solidarity unless you are facing the same risks they are. Here's another article, Agencies Reward Shows of Restraint. And this is one of those feel-good articles from Philadelphia. A few police agencies in the U.S. have begun rewarding officers for showing restraint in the line of duty, putting the tactic on a par with bravery. More than 40 Philadelphia officers have received awards since December for defusing conflicts without shooting, clubbing, or otherwise using maximum force against anyone. You might think, wow, isn't that a good thing? But the real question is, what's the record of these 40 officers generally? Are they, in fact, have they had instances of brutality in the recent past, in spite of these awards, or before these awards? What about the rest of the police department? Have those officers who've been guilty of those abuses been either disciplined, fired, or prosecuted? No stats on that, and frankly, it ain't very likely. However, I guess on the upside, the LA Police Union has called the Preservation of Life Award a terrible thing, because that Life Award is the idea that officers should try to rein themselves in is a terrible idea because officers might second-guess themselves into tragic situations. According to the LA Police Protective League's Board of Directors, this award will prioritize the lives of suspected criminals over the lives of LAPD officers. Again, it's an attempt to throw out the our lives are in jeopardy and on the line card which, as I've talked about in prior shows, is not really justified or backed up by evidence in terms of the risks of a police person compared to, let's say, to a farmer or a truck driver, where the rate of deaths is much higher. It's a debatable discussion, but it's one that certainly needs to be looked at. Here's another article. San Francisco rents now number 3 in the country. Area moves ahead of Boston. Only San Francisco and New York are more costly. San Jose is now the 3rd most expensive rental market in the country. According to May stats from Zumper, the apartment rental website, and the median price for a 1-bedroom apartment is $3,590 in San Francisco, $2,290 in San Jose, and $2,270 in Oakland. And that we aren't talking about what the story is in Santa Cruz, but good luck, all you rent seekers, or I should say all you apartment seekers. City won't appeal ruling on police stings. Here's a story from Long Beach from the Mercury News from June 3rd. The prosecutor down there said he will not appeal a judge's ruling that said the city police department unfairly targeted gay men when it carried out lewd conduct stings. The city prosecutor said he didn't agree with the Superior Court Judge Hallam Dinadine, but he did not believe the judge's findings should affect relations between the city and its LGBT residents because of their positive relationship over many years with mutual respect and open dialogue. However, what happened was there were stings of gay folks in the restroom. Specifically, the controversy stemmed from the 2014 arrest of Rory Maroney, a 50-year-old Long Beach resident, charged with indecent exposure and lewd conduct after a run-in with an undercover police officer inside a restroom at Recreation Park. Bruce Nickerson, the attorney representing Maroney, had argued that the police department's vice unit unfairly targeted gay men because they used only male undercover officers to arrest male suspects seeking sex with other men. Maroney previously told the Times he did not enter the restroom seeking a sexual encounter and simply responded to the undercover officer's flirtations. The judge, Donadina, agreed. In his ruling, the judge found that the police department intentionally targeted men who engaged in homosexual sex and said the undercover officer's tactics induced the crime. News that the stings were continuing stunned some local LGBT activists, especially in Long Beach, a city with an openly gay mayor. Similar tactics have been abandoned by some police departments throughout the state amidst political backlash and lawsuits in recent years. I doubt that the mayor, again, this is an example of how somebody can be a member of what appears to be an oppressed group, but because of his class status, they have joined the oppressors, joined the ruling class, whether they're gay or female or black or Latino or a former homeless activist, whatever. If they have joined the establishment in order to continue the same practices and policies that happened before, and then they express surprise and outrage that there are stings going on, I mean, think, come on. The police department is committing stings. It is a known fact. And for an openly gay mayor to claim he doesn't know what's going on is a hard one to swallow. So that's, I got one more example. I mean, that'll give you I sputter away here. I wonder how that would relate to our own police department, our own police chief. That I'm sure would, dismiss any claims that he knew anything about this or that, if and when it happens. This is I'm not saying this because I feel malicious or hostile or have a particularly low opinion of Kevin Vogel, the head of our police department, but that's the nature of folks in positions of power. Their first response is to guard their own positions and to guard what they consider to be the reputation and their legacy in the department. Here's another article, Protect Innocent People from Asset Forfeiture. Police officers force their way into your home, believe you possess illegal drugs. They arrest you. They seize your computer, your cash, your valuable coin collection. Charges against you are dropped. You're innocent. But when you request the return of your property, you learn that it has been permanently forfeited and dispersed via civil asset forfeiture. You are not alone. A recent Washington Post investigation revealed that since 2100, law enforcement seized cash worth more than $2.5 billion from motorists and others without first obtaining search warrants or indictments, and that in 80% of these cases, the property owners were never charged with crimes. And there's a law being authored that SB 443 stands for the principle it requires a criminal conviction before law enforcement can deprive a person of his or her property. Like, for example, with the police and the homeless all the time, regularly. If they're not confiscating it and saying you have to come back in the tiny window on Tuesday and Thursday when for 2 hours we'll be open to let you have your property, they're just trashing it and throwing it away. At least the rangers and the police were doing this in days past, and I've gotten reports that some still are doing it. Also, this Bill 443 removes the incentives to arrest people and seize their property and then keep the property, forfeiture, asset forfeiture, by preventing them from receiving a share of federally forfeited assets unless there are underlying convictions. And the article has a sort of more complex and subtle discussion, but unfortunately, it looks like we're out of time, and just in time for a final tune from Dave Lippmann, and a goodbye from me. And a reminder, if you want any more information about Free Radio or HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I work with, you got to call HUF, 423-HUF, 423-4833. And you can also check me out at, I'll check out the Freedom Sleepers. They're coming up next Tuesday, the 14th. And there's also going to be more information on that and on the City Hall's latest capers, plus the rather shocking case here locally in jail of the death through what appears to be negligence by Sheriff Hart's authorities of Krista DeLuca. And we're going to have Doug Loisel, who has already written about this, former director of the Homeless Lack of Services Center when it actually provided a few more services than it does now, on Sunday. And come back at 9:30, and the show from 9:30 to 1 and beyond will have more info on that. That's about it. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. Here's a little more Dave Lippmann.
We got the power if we stand together. Woke up this morning with a funny feeling of doubt. First time I got to work, I had been contracted out. By lunchtime, there was downsizing all about. I asked what was the story. They said we had been bought out. So here's your 201K and your one trust sprout. I was gonna leave it to the boys, or I was gonna make some noise. We got the power, power, power. If we stand together. First they came for the housekeepers, and I said nothing because I was not a housekeeper. Then they came for the fast food workers and the Walmart workers and the domestic workers and the tomato pickers who were picking quicker, but they couldn't get another penny a pound. Then they came for the groundskeepers and the engineers, and then they came for me, and no one was left to speak for me at all. Maybe it's time to get on a fall, you and me. Let's see if we can pull this society out of the night.